If you're serious about getting better at mixing and producing, this is for you. Our Patreon gives you access to weekly ad-free technical episodes, plus a library of over 250 past episodes packed with mixing, mastering, and production knowledge you won't find anywhere else. Don't miss out. Join now at mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive and start learning today. Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. It's your host DK, and today we're going to do an episode that we haven't done in a while, something that used to be very popular on our episode. We're going to talk about how to mix vocals, something like that, and the ways that I'm thinking about it these days. So obviously mixing vocals is important. In most genres, vocals are the most important part of the song, and mixing them well can really be a game changer. Now, what's really interesting is that as the years go by, I'm wondering if I'm picking up a trend on intentionally poor mixes. Here's the thing, like, oftentimes I will get a client, this is weird to say, but it's not strange for me to get asked by management or labels or the artists themselves that they're working with artists. They are the artist with a proven track record, with a high amount of streams, with some form of virality. And you listen to their backlog and none of them are well mixed. And so your job changes. So this is not those cases. I'm seeing those happening more and more, where it's like there's obviously some magic happening with these crappy, like, non-traditional, I don't want to say it's crappy, but like these non-traditional mixes, right? So that's a different story. But we're talking about like classic right up and down the lane pop vocals. We're going to start there. And then also in various other genres too. And this is how I think about shaping vocals. These are the kind of things, and I'm kind of riffing out loud right now, but when I mix vocals, I am thinking about a few different things. One of the first things that I'm thinking about is the tone of the vocals. Now, how much low end of that fundamental frequency are we going to keep? How much of the mid-range is important? And I'm not going to get into these technical details, but more importantly, what do these different frequencies and tonal balances mean? Right. The second thing I'm thinking about is like dynamics, the compression levels, saturation. And then lastly, the last thing that I do is think about placement on the instrumental, like how loud am I going to make the vocals relative to everything else in the track? And the interesting thing is we can get very, very technical about all of these certain points of the process. And I didn't even get to like FX or anything like that. We will, or even automation and using DynaSyst even, or whatever. I guess that goes into dynamics, melodyning, tuning, auto-tune. We're not even going to get into those. When it comes to mixing vocals, the number one thing and that I always bring up is, what is the intention? Like, what is the, even if the rough mix is absolutely bad, you have to have a rough mix to reference to. When you listen to the rough mix, what is the song? Is it an easy, how would you describe it? Like, is it an easy listening song? Is it a club banger? Is it something in between? Is this an aggressive song? Is this an intimate song? Listen to the lyrics, listen to the performance, listen to the arrangement. And I would even go as far back as like listening to the backlog of other songs that this artist or producer has made. Like, what is happening? Get all the context that you can to determine what the song wants to do, right? And it's not just like, it is just context clues here. And part of it is guessing, right? And unless the artist, manager, producer has explicitly said out loud to you that they have been unhappy with how things have been mixed up until this point and we are looking for radical change, you kind of want to keep it relatively within the same ballpark of what they've done before, and how it sounds and how it feels. Now, I will even go as far as say when an artist, manager, label, rep, and even the artists themselves have said, I don't like my rough mix. I need this to sound different. If you do too much difference, it is going to be working against you. Because at the end of the day, when you do something different, they are also hearing it differently for the first time. And we're not even going to go into like, what is it called? Like when people get obsessed with the rough mix, they've heard it 1,000 times. We're not even talking about that. We're talking about just the idea of they built a song emotionally with intended emotions. And when they listen back to it, it feels a certain way. And then when you change the mix, it does change the perception and the framing of that song. Right? So if it's a sad song, you don't want to mix it so hard that like all of a sudden it's a club banger. It's meant to be sad. What does the vocal do when it's sad? It might be dark. It might be more dynamic. The low parts will be low. I mean, the low dynamic volume parts will stay low. There's going to be high energetic moments possibly, or maybe it's going to be low energy the whole time. Are you going to add a ton of top end, which usually adds energy to a vocal? Probably not for a sad song. Like, is this within like Ariana Grande pop vocal context sad song? Or is this like a indie bedroom sad song? Sometimes records do better when they don't sound like they were mixed in a $1 million studio, right? You lose some intimacy there. So these are all context clues that you have to be attuned to. And I would even argue, and to extrapolate this idea into other parts of mixing, this part of the mixing process is always going to be more important than the technical tips and tricks and tools and plugins and approaches to these problems. Instinctually, even I say this out loud, like it's so obvious, like everybody has tastes, everybody has musical preferences. And part of the artist's work and the producer's work is to kind of connect with their audience through their tastes and through their perspectives, right? This emotional transference through their view, through their perspective. Yeah, and so I would even go as far as to say, like, my 5-year-old Down syndrome son still has perspectives and has great views and has songs that he likes, songs that he doesn't like, shows and movies that he likes, shows and movies that he doesn't like. Every single one of us has a taste and preference. And the biggest thing that gets in the way of us mixers is overshadowing the artist and producer's preferences and replacing it with our own. So we do not want to do that. Like, it's kind of like, I mean, if you've heard this, without thinking about the context, without trying to figure out the context clues, having communication with the artist and the producer, whoever's involved, right? Talking to them thoroughly, trying to figure out what the song wants to do, what they want to do. Like, if you just start mixing without any of this context, it's like getting a fancy meal and without even tasting it, immediately putting salt on it. Like, At best, you were lucky. It was a lucky guess. At worst, you're offending the chef and you'll get kicked out just for the concept of doing that. Right? So it's like, okay, let's at least get a test, get a taste, listen to the song, figure it out, just listen to it all the way through. Again, listen to the lyrics, get all these context clues, have get on a phone call or text chat with the artist or whoever's part of the creative process. Oftentimes that's with the producer as well. And just have a conversation going. Yes, I even mean when the artist is not technically experienced, when the producer is not technically experienced with EQs, and they may kind of make up for their unaddressed insecurity by trying to be technical with you. It might be an insecurity thing. It might just be them truly trying to be helpful. Regardless, like, instead of criticizing them for obviously not knowing what they're doing, listen and try to hear through to what they're really saying. They might not be saying the right tools, they might not be saying the right things, but what are they trying to convey? And oftentimes, I mean, like, the better the producer, the better the artist, the more experienced you become, that communication becomes a lot easier because now they do know what they're saying. But I'm talking about at the beginning, and even with some artists down the line, like, there's going to be times when they don't know what they're talking about, obviously. And you're going to have to see through that and figure that out. So figure, again, what is the emotional intention? What does the song want to do? Like, the song will tell you what it wants to do. The producer will tell you what they've struggled with, what they like. And a question that I like to ask is, what do you love about the current mix? And what is the one thing that you wish you could change? Like, limiting it to one and one. Like, the one thing that they love, I wouldn't change a thing about that thing. And then the thing that they're willing to change, like, consider that as one of your main points to address while you're doing a mix down of the song. Okay. Anyway, when it comes to mixing vocals, here's what I'm thinking about. When I hear a rough mix, I refuse to do any sort of mix without a rough mix, without some sort of, like, it doesn't matter how many references they give me. I want the rough mix. I don't care how bad it is. I don't care how poorly produced it is or unfinished they claim it is. They sat there. I mean, think about the process. Like, if you've ever been an artist or been in the producer seat before you started mixing, or even while you started mixing, think about your own process. Like, even if you are completely aware of your own inadequacies, you sat in that chair and were, like, bouncing in your chair. You were grooving to the song. You were feeling something. There was some magic going by the time it left your hands or by the time you moved on to the next step, right? We're trying to enhance that magic, not recreate or introduce new magic. Sometimes you're introducing new magic, but we're going to, at the very least, enhance that already existing magic. Okay, so we're going to take all the context clues. We're going to figure it out. Let's say that this is a less established artist. This is one of their few songs that they've released. So that means there's a lot more leeway into experimentation, especially if you communicate with the artist. They don't have, like, I mean, if you're working with an artist with 3 million monthly listeners and they're already doing well, you're probably not going to change the mix that much. Like, there is something that is working with the sound that they've been doing. But if you're working with someone that has, you know, a few thousand monthly listeners, there's probably some leeway unless they tell you otherwise. So we're going to take that into consideration. Okay, how do we mix the vocals? Okay, all the other songs on their Spotify playlist was bright, very bright. This artist seems to be like a pop artist, right up the middle. Ariana Grande type vibes, Ed Sheeran type vibes, just pop. Very good, like, you know, good vocalist. The mic was actually kind of a dark mic, but if we go back to the other mixes and even the reference mix, it sounds like they've been trying to brighten it up quite a bit. And you've determined, like, hey, I think it still could be brighter because I've referenced other pop mixes on Spotify or whatever, on YouTube, Apple Music, Tidal. And it's like, okay, we have more. I've determined that there's more headroom for more brightness. And now I'm going to also accommodate the instrumental mix to, or change the instrumental mix to accommodate for that. Leave room in the instrumental mix for that. Okay. So also, if it's like a straight up pop mix, we also know vocals should be on top of everything. Like, I would say, put them, when you mix in the vocals, you put them in and then make them a little bit too loud. Like, make them almost uncomfortably too loud, especially if you've got some experience. And then that's where a pop vocal should be. Right. Okay, let's see here. So things that do affect the mix, right? Removing low mids is going to make it more present. It'll make it cut through the mix. It'll lose a lot of intimacy, but it will be shiny and bright. It'll be nice. It'll be very energetic. Leaving low mids, like 200 to 300 hertz, depending on it's if a male, female, if they're singing high in their range or if they're singing low in the range, it's like normal range, 200 to 300 hertz, that like chest part of the vocal, that deep part of the vocal. Taking too much out of a song where it's the opposite, it's not pop, it's an intimate love song on an acoustic guitar and piano, just natural, warm sounding song. you want to leave in an ample amount of that low end of the vocal. Like that part of the vocal is something that you can hear. We've heard of proximity effect in microphones. It's the same exact thing with how we hear. Like if someone is singing far away from you, you're not going to really hear the low end of their voice. If someone is singing really close to you, you're going to hear that low, like right now on the podcast, on radio vocals, like they're hyper compressed and they've got a lot of low end. There's a decent amount of low end in my voice right now, way more than I would leave in for like a pop song. And there's an intimacy that comes from that. There's a reason why radio does it, why podcasters do it, why they prefer microphones that are less bright and more boomy. And that sounds like a negative word, but and it's well utilized within this space of talking head. Right? So it's very intimate. It's very close. You can hear it. It doesn't need to cut through. Anyway, so those are all things that I'm considering. In the mid-range, like around 1K, you got some like nasaliness, possibly some of the room tone around 500 to 700 hertz. You got some S's that you need to go on. I would not DS too much. I would be very careful with your DSing. I think that most people DS, most beginners DS too much. They're oversensitive to and DS too much. So be careful with that. Take that with a grain of salt. Another thing that I would consider is top end, right? Sometimes I have a combination of vocal mics. Microphones have different resonances or different tones. Each vocalist will have different resonances and different tones that they can produce. And then even the same vocalist in just a different key or in a different range of their vocals in a different room can produce different resonances. Resonances are not something to be killed. Resonances is what causes us to recognize what that is. So I would actually recommend against cutting too many resonances. If you're cutting like a high Q narrow cut at more than two or three resonance spots, then you're probably cutting too much. There's going to be a point where you lose the life of a vocal, like the personality of a vocal, if you do too much narrow Q cutting. Now, the 2 to 3 is not a hard and fast rule, but you should at least start critically listening and getting skeptical around two or three high Q cuts. 3 is, I think, like the max that I would ever do. If you do more than that, like furrow your brows, reference other songs, turn it on and off. Is it really actually making it better or worse? Like really consider that. It should be a sign of reflection. Okay, so the next thing that I would consider is compression. Now, compression sometimes is not super audible. Sometimes it is more audible. And I mean in the sense of like, we've always talked about the need to compress a lot, or sorry, there's this fear of overcompressing. I would actually say that it is very difficult to overcompress as long as you've been thoughtful about your attack and release times, and depending on the context. Like if it's a pop country song and the vocals are on top and very loud, like you can crank that compressor and it'll sound great. Vocals will be very stable. It's right there, right in your face, very aggressive. And that's a good thing. Like overcompression is really context-based in the sense of like, this is a warm, intimate song that's a lot of acoustic guitars, acoustic stuff. And then all of a sudden you have this, like, for some reason, like this feeling of an overly aggressive vocal. You may not even, it doesn't even have to be about the hearing compression. It's about like, it feels too aggressive. Relative, it's too dense. Like this one element is too dense. You know, so now again, less compression, going easier on the compression during using slower attack and release times might create a sense of smoothness, maintain intimacy. You need to have the utility of a compressor, right? You can't have it be too dynamic. Right, and then your vocals are going to be distracting. The last thing you want is the listener to have to turn up and down the volume knob in their car for each section or for each song. Right, so like they're not, you don't want them to ride the fader in the car. That's the worst thing ever. That'll detract from the song. So I would recommend just enough vocals, sorry, just enough compression where that is appropriate for the song. And again, it's difficult to do. It's difficult to do too much compression if it's a pop, energetic, aggressive song. So that's just something to consider. Okay, last thing I was going to say, we didn't even talk about effects. We talked about placement. We talked about pop vocals are a little bit louder. Indie rock is going to be quieter. You know, the density of a mix, if it's just acoustic guitar and piano, I would put the volume of the vocals like closer to everything together, because now we're also talking about space. Like if it's a crowded mix with lots of different elements, then sometimes turning up the volume of the vocals is going to help it be heard, be audible. Sometimes it being audible and hearing what the listener, the singer is saying is not as important. Nirvana, for example. Weird Al made a whole joke about that. Smells like team spirit, like smells like Nirvana. Teen spirit. Okay, anyway, I'm getting distracted. So volume, compression, space. Oh yeah, with a more dense mix, you might want to turn it up if it's appropriate with the energy. And if it's a less dense mix, I would recommend, if it's probably meant to be more intimate song, it's probably meant to be more, and there's less space that it's competing with. These are all elements that you want to consider. Notice that I'm not talking about specific tools and specific EQ points, because those tools and those EQ points, there's an infinite number of ways to solve these problems. But the way that you are a bad mixer is when you don't know what problems you're solving. So like a lot of these beginner mixers will just put stuff up onto vocals without considering the problems that they're trying to solve. Like they haven't thought about this. Like, and I've been there too. Like when you're thinking overly technically, you're like, okay, I got to saturate the vocals without thinking why. Why does this vocal need saturation? I got to saturate the vocals. I got to compress the vocals because this YouTuber told me so. Why are we doing this sort of stuff? The highest form of mixing is going to be conscious mixing. It's going to be alive in the moment, thinking about the context, thinking about everything, and doing everything intentionally. The tools, again, I said there's a million different ways, an infinite amount of different ways you can solve those problems. You can remove the low end. You can compress a vocal. There's an infinite amount of different ways to solve the problems. Most people that are bad at mixing, that could use a ton of improvement for mixing, do not know what problems they're solving. Do not even stop to consider the problems they are solving. They just move forward and try to like problem solve without identifying the problem. And that's the thing that you want to avoid. That's why when it comes to stuff like this, like the highest level mixing content on the internet that aren't trying to sell you a course or have some sort of personal agenda, they are always going to be about use your ears. And more than using your ears, I would say listen for context. Listen to the artist when you communicate with them, when you talk to them. Listen to the song, what is it trying to tell you? Listen to the track itself in solo and in context. What does the song want to do? What does the vocal want to do? What does the artist want to do? What does the rough mix tell you that it wants to do? Like, and then you listen to your final mix. Is it doing all of that? Is it doing all of that? And the exact how you got there is near unimportant. Like if you solve the problem, then in retrospect, just like any sort of classical music analysis, then we determine that what you did after you've already gained success and that this was a provably great mix with a provably great song, then we'll go back and be like, what did you do? But in the moment, what you did, what we are as mixers doing is not important when it's not in retrospect. When we are in the present moment, it is not important. Same thing with microphones. The most famous microphones were mostly famous because that's what was available. It wasn't some deeply thought, highly nuanced thing. And that could be part of it, but most of the time that's not it, right? They became famous in retrospect. Same thing with analog. I can go on forever with anything creative. Yeah, the toilet bowl with art in general. Sorry, it's not fair to process songs in the present moment and think about it, approach it in the same way that you processed another song in retrospect. I hope that is translating correctly. I hope that people understand what I'm trying to say here. Okay, so I talked about, and then effects and reverbs. Hopefully the rough mix has some idea of space that they give you. Is it like short room reverbs? Is it going to be delays? Is it going to be throws? And then honestly, from the way that I mix, I can't speak on anybody else's perspectives on this. It's a context of what they wanted space-wise in general, and then just automating the crap out of stuff based on inspiration. I play back the song and I'm like, ooh, that would sound really good with a delay throw here. Oh, with a reverb throw here. This section would sound good with more room verb, right? And I have like at least four or five different EQs and reverbs and delays that I'm messing with and throwing. And I often create one or two more depending on the context of the song, right? And there might be other techniques that I try. I might, instead of a regular delay, I might do like a filtered octave up delay where I have an altar boy up in before the delay. And then I put a reverb after the delay, a little long reverb after the delay. So the delay is actually kind of reverbed out in itself. Who knows? I might have some creative things that I try. But the point is, I think more importantly, it's when it comes to delays and reverbs and effects and stuff, contrast is underutilized and is going to be the most important part of making a song sound wonderful. Again, unless the context is in a mix where it's a live orchestra mix or it's a live band mix or it's a live record where it's all supposed to be taken in and understood that it's all within a single space. For most songs, it's not like that, right? But that's something to consider. Okay, we talked about dynamics. We talked about vocal tonal balance. We've talked about compression. We've talked about space. We've talked about volume. I think that's really it. Like one small tip for mixing vocals, like when placing vocals, like let's say that I like to mix the vocals, if not not in solo, but with the instrumental down. So I'll mix the instrumental first and then I'll turn down this is just me, right? Turn the instrumental down so it's still, I can hear the instrumental, but it's mostly vocal. EQ and do everything with the vocal, considering the instrumental mix. And then I turn the instrumental back up. The final step that I do is placing the vocal, like really dialing in that placement. The initial placement before I start automating it is how loud do we want the vocals, right? And one trick that always works for me for whatever reason, if I'm not feeling very confident while listening to them at my normal listening volume, is I will turn down my monitors to near whisper quiet, like very, very quiet. Your ears are now hearing it differently. Your speakers are producing it differently. And if I can place the vocals correctly, if I can hear the vocals on top of everything else while at a very whisper quiet listening level, then it's probably going to be good. I also have Sound ID and I have a Stream Deck where I've mapped MIDI out to, with a click of a button, switch it to like an NS10 profile. NS10 profile, volume down, even sometimes in the mono preset, like turn it down, NS10 profile, mono, place the vocals, turn it back up, go back to normal listening volumes, listen for it. It's almost always works out for me. So another thing too is like, if you don't have a secondary set of monitors or if you don't have Sound ID to emulate a second set of pair of monitors, literally just turning the volume down and at a very different listening level is going to make it sound like a different set of monitors. So that's why I do that. It's like a secondary perspective of like, okay, if I just hear the mid-range, really just no low end, do the vocals sit on top? And then, yeah, it's great. if the vocals are, or is the vocal sitting where it's supposed to be sitting, whether it's in the mix, behind, or up front, right? So yeah, that's kind of it. Hopefully that helps with vocal mixing. Yes, this last thing here. I hear this a lot. What if the vocals that I receive are recorded very poorly? So optimally, you want to have well-recorded vocals. Excuse me, little yawn there. Well-recorded vocals. I think it's a reasonable complaint to about poorly recorded vocals. Like, I'm not even talking about like a bad mic. I'm talking about recorded in the fucking bathroom with their iPhone. You know, let's start there. At that point, I might lean into it. Again, they made decisions before it got to you. And hopefully, if it's a great artist, they made those decisions intentionally. So consider whether or not it was intentional. Now, if they're asking you to perform magic, making it sound relatively pro with these very poorly recorded vocals, you're going to hate me for this. Many of you are going to hate me for this. It is our job as engineers to do the very best that we can to make them sound good as they requested. So here's the thing. I cut my teeth on mixing poorly recorded vocals, tracks of any kind, drums, guitars. This is when tips and techniques, tricks like help you out big time. Because if you need to polish a turd, then you need to have a large arsenal, repertoire of mixing techniques that will help you address many, many and major problems. If you have tons of problems and they're all very big because it's very poorly recorded, you need to have a larger arsenal of tools to get you to that point. So when you've addressed the problem, after you know what the problems are and you're like, okay, this is not working, that's when the tools that you have, the tips and tricks that you've seen on the internet, that's when it becomes helpful, right? So remember that order. It's like addressing, listening, figuring out what the problems are, then it's the techniques. It's not the opposite. You don't just do techniques into good vocals because good vocals is contextual. Okay. Okay, so yeah, so basically what I'm saying is if you have a crappy recorded vocal, especially if they're paying you, right, you do not complain. It is not your job. You do your best. And if you admit defeat, which is okay, do not blame the artist, right? I mean, obviously you can help them. If you can help them be like, hey, is there anything that we can do here that's reasonable? But like getting aggressive and being like, you shouldn't have done this. Why are you sending this to me? Like, I want to take my name off the record. Think about the way that you approach it. You should be flexible enough as the engineer to be able to accommodate anything. Like if you listen to a lot of these high level engineers and you really get down to it, many of them are very, very confident about their ability to mix poorly recorded vocals. Like, I am very good at polishing turds. Very good. And I say that too. Like, and if you listen to me, if you've heard my mixes and stuff before, if you understand the level of which I mix at, do you think that if I get a poorly recorded vocal and a beginner gets a poorly recorded vocal, that I can make a significantly better sounding vocal with the same exact poorly recorded vocal? The answer is obviously yes. Of course I can. And that's part of the skill of being a mixer. I will say it's counterintuitive because the more renowned that you become as a mixer, the more polishing turds that you've done, right, at the beginning stages of a career, at the later points of your career and of your growth, and if you've been working with bigger producers, bigger artists, ones with a track record of success, the less you have to do. So it's very funny. At the beginning, you have to do a lot and you have to learn all these techniques and you have to like solve big problems. But like some of these artists that I work with now, I change a few dBs of different things a little bit And you'd be surprised how little difference there is. And still, that's what they're paying me the most amount of money for. I wouldn't say that that's a bad or a good thing, because there's also very experienced, high track record, great track record artists and producers that do want me, and I change it quite a bit. Again, that's all contextual, but it's not weird for me to do less because the producers are doing more later stages of career. So just being able to be flexible. So it's almost difficult now because now you have more room to be flexible. Is this one of those songs that they don't want much, or is this one of those songs where they want a lot? And it's that, to be fair, it's easier to understand what they want at the earlier stages of one's career than it is at the later stages of one's career. Consider that with context and nuance. Okay, I think that's it for this episode. Hopefully that helps you mix your next vocal. Yeah. That's it. If you want to hear more technical tips and tricks on how to use your plugins, how to approach different mixing concepts, go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive to gain access for $4 a month to our exclusive episodes and ad-free episodes of the main podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy. Hey, you. Yeah, you. Come join our Discord. The Mixing Music Discord server is filled with tons of awesome information and people. People that can help you out and information that can help you grow your business and to help you improve your mixes. So come join us and find the invitation link at mixingmusicpodcast.com.